Good afternoon, everyone. We are so glad to have you here today for the Baylor Conversation Series. A great turnout here at the end of the spring semester. The semester is like a sprint, isn't it? So, I mean, it's like running a marathon at a sprint pace. So we appreciate all of you being here with us this afternoon. The Baylor Conversation Series kicked off a couple of years ago. We're now in season two of the Conversation Series. It actually began back in the fall. We were in San Diego and Nashville, San Antonio as well. In January, just a few months ago, we were all together for the spring faculty meeting, and we had a conversation series at that point as well. But it's good to catch up here at the end of the spring semester. This is always a great opportunity for us to get an update from the university leadership about priorities of the university and things that are happening around Baylor. We'll get an update on Illuminate and Give Light and the operations of the university, as well as Ignite. So it's Give Light, Ignite, Illuminate. So we'll be, you know, we have all kinds of light themes today to talk about. But before I introduce our panelists today, I wanted to let you know where Dr. Livingstone is today. She is in Washington, D.C. with our national champion women's basketball team as they toured the nation's capital. Yesterday, they had an opportunity to tour after hours, get an exclusive tour of the United States Capitol building in a tour that was led by our former Congressman Chet Edwards, who, you know, serves here at Baylor now as the W.R. Pogue Distinguished Chair of Public Service. So it was a wonderful opportunity for our team last night. The visit to the White House, though, was a lot more than just honoring the accomplishments of our women's basketball team. It's about the place of women in collegiate athletics, as well as in places of leadership around our nation. And what better platform for our president at Baylor to be at the White House today as a leader in higher education herself, and also as a former Division I college basketball student athlete. So greetings from the nation's capital from Dr. Livingstone. But today we are focused on updates on Give Light, that campaign, the Illuminate Academic Strategic Plan, a new provost beginning in just a couple of days, and on the university's operations. A quick reminder, and then we'll get into the conversation, I promise. The audio from today's conversation is being recorded, and you can find those conversations, this one and past conversations, on the president's website, which is baylor.edu/president. And you can find the conversation series link and find all of those conversations should you wish to listen to them again. Joining us for today's conversation, we'll begin with David Roselli. Dave is Vice President for Advancement here at Baylor. Brett Dalton, our Chief Business Officer. And then Dr. Gary Carini, who holds a number of positions, wears a number of hats, I guess, Vice Provost for Graduate Professional Education and Strategic Planning. So would you please welcome our panelists today. Dave, let's go ahead and begin with you first, okay, since you're furthest away from me. It's been a busy semester, as we were just talking about, but last week we had a very exciting announcement about a $15 million gift from the Sunderland Foundation for renovation and restoration of Tidwell Bible Building. What was the significance of this gift? I mean, besides just the number that we see, not only for the Give Light campaign, but also just for Baylor itself.
Well, thank you, Laurie, and thank you for being here today. I was noticing as we sat here in the Tidwell building in the distance, it is most definitely iconic. For those of you who have been through the building, it's self-explanatory why we, the significance of the gift in terms of renovating that facility, much needed, and it's has not been renovated since it's was built back in 1954. So there's significance just in that perspective. With regard to Give Light, the significance of that project, that gift in our comprehensive campaign, a year ago, the Board of Regents endorsed about $300 million worth of capital projects in the overall landscape of our Give Light campaign. And they asked the development team to pursue leadership gifts for those projects, and Tidwell was one of the top priorities. We didn't realize at the time that Tidwell was going to be the first project to launch. And that's what's significant to Baylor, because obviously our constituents, our parents, alumni, friends, our foundation partners are coming alongside the Academy and making a statement that the Academy is important in this comprehensive campaign, as illustrated by the gift to Tidwell. And it's not insignificant that the number one pillar, our foundational pillars of which we are kind of laying the foundation for everything we do, is to continue with an unambiguously Christian perspective and mission. And so it is, I don't believe a coincidence, the very first project that we're launching in this campaign is our Bible building. So significance to Give Light, significance to Baylor, and significant to all of you who have been through that structure.
Yeah, I'm glad you pointed out that you could just look right back there and you see the tower at Tidwell, and it's exciting, Dave, that a lot of those iconic images, like the wonderful carvings that we see, will be a major part of it, will still be a part of Tidwell even after its renovation, which we like to use the word restoration as well. Exactly. It'll be a beautiful, beautiful building on our campus. We appreciate that. Thank you, Dave. Gary, it does, you know, definitely point to that first pillar in Illuminate, our unambiguously Christian environment. There's been considerable work done as we switch gears now and talk about Illuminate, our academic strategic plan. You've had a steering committee working on that, faculty across campus working very hard on implementing this particular plan. Can you give us an update on the strategic plan and where it currently stands now?
Sure can. And I was thinking about, as you're asking the question too, the Regents approved the academic strategic plan a year ago, so it was May of last year. Since then, we have made tremendous progress. And I want to fast forward to what's happened with the Illuminate Steering Committee. That is a committee with five subcommittees, each responding and dealing with the different initiatives that we have. So the five initiatives, we had January 31st is our first deadline. March 31st is our second deadline for internal proposals. We had, I'm proud to say, 51 proposals total that cut across all schools, several departments. We have in the subcommittees as membership 54 faculty that have been involved in vetting the actual proposals, in addition to the chairs, associate deans, and deans as well. We met today. We're wrapping up our first round recommendations to the new provost and endorsing. So there are three different decisions that we'll make: to endorse it, revise and resubmit, or deny. And we're assessing those very rigorously. I'm so proud of the group doing that, assessing that rigorously to make sure in this particular case we're moving toward R1 in those pursuits. So as you think about the third pillar and then the building out of those five initiatives, that's where we're pointing to with the Illuminate Steering Committee. What we'll continue to do then is review our process. And we've done a lot of work, but we always want to go back with input that we have to streamline the process this summer as we announce our plans in the fall to continue with the Illuminate activities. So there's much more to do, and I think we've made tremendous progress based on the support of so many of you that I'm looking at in this room that are just incredible and have worked tirelessly on not only developing the proposals as principal investigators, but reviewing the proposals in a very, very thoughtful manner, trying to achieve and moving toward our goal of being an R1 institution.
Big news on the horizon is that in 2 days, a new provost will arrive. We'll be welcoming Dr. Nancy Brickhouse to the Baylor campus. She officially will assume her role. And I guess that means the end of the Garys.
There's the other Gary
right Carini,
there.
Gary Mortensen, who've been our dual provosts. We should thank them for their wonderful work. So now we do have the two Garys in the both room, and Dr. Mortensen and you, Dr. Carini. What has the provost office staff, who are here as well, so thank you all for the work you've done. And what has this entire team in the provost done to prepare for Dr. Nancy Brickhouse arriving at Baylor?
Well, I think, and Gary can respond too, although he's not up here, but he came just in time, so thank you. So we actually, we think she arrived this afternoon, reports on Wednesday. So had that long drive from St. Louis, so is here, and we're incredibly excited. I think honestly, when we arrived on April 9th, it was to look at the, and I would say just the tremendously complex job of the provost, and to look at working toward with the provost office staff and with the deans, looking at not just streamlining, but being very, very intentional about what we do. Here's our mission, and are we taking actions to pursue that mission? In meeting with faculty this summer, which I think really informed it in many ways for us, the faculty said we were asking for ideas along several ideas, along several dimensions, and they said, whatever it is you do, make sure it's simple, transparent, rigorous, and dynamic. And so with that, then adding our perspective of we want PATNF to be a service center, and that is perhaps changed culturally, but how do we serve and not keep the units from doing things? So how do we streamline? How do we rationalize? How do we get better at what we do while maintaining those kinds of things that are true to our identity? And I'll give you one. I'm looking at Dr. Benninghoff right now, who really provided the content for our sharing with the Board of Regents in February about our faculty hiring process. As David indicated, pillar number one, unambiguously Christian, and so it's so important that we stay with that, and as we interview faculty to identify where their faith journey is and what that means and how they articulate it, that is unwavering, that is non-negotiable. So, and that is to say, again, working very hard to keep very close to us those kinds of things that we need to continue to hold, that we say we are doing. So pillar number one, Dr. Benninghoff, as Gary and I worked with him, and I'll as you acknowledged us, I'd like to acknowledge the vice provost that are here, and if you are here, tremendous work in looking at what we do and what we need to keep doing and then stop doing, get better at, streamline, and have just within the office and the team there has been a tremendous help in doing that.
Thank you. Brett, I guess with Dr. Brickhouse coming, you are no longer the new kid on the block.
Yeah,
so
great
I'm sure you're glad about that, especially among the president's council members. So you have been in your role now for about a year. Can you tell us about your fall and your spring semesters and what those have been like for you?
Yeah, well, thank you. Obviously, it has been busy, but let me just pick a few words to describe it. Number one, it's been fun, primarily because of the Garys. And I heard you all clap, and I know that was sincere, but I want to take this opportunity to thank them for the welcome that they gave me to Baylor and the opportunity to work alongside with them. Within just a few weeks, they gave me the opportunity to spend 2 days at a dean's retreat and to really accelerate my learning about Baylor and to accelerate my understanding of what's most important to Baylor, the core academic mission. And if not for that, I think that it would have been a lot more difficult, and it would have taken much longer for our team as a whole in admissions, financial aid, IT, finance, facilities, to really focus on Illuminate and to focus on our job, which is to support the core mission of the university. So thanks to the Garys, thanks to the deans that have been a part of that. John Wilson has become too close. we've communicated a lot, and I think we have a lot of good things going on in a number of colleges and areas. So busy, but I like to think that it has been productive as well. Looking forward, though, to Nancy being here and not being the new kid on the block, for sure.
All right. Thank you, Brett. You have some huge areas, and we'll talk about more of those. Support for research. We'll talk about Ignite and admissions. But, Dave, we're going to go back to you for a minute. If it hasn't gone out already, it will soon. Is that an invitation to an event where we can welcome Dr. Nancy Brickhouse? I think that'll be next Monday. If it hasn't gone out yet, if you haven't received it? Okay,
yeah,
good. I'm glad to know that. I wasn't sure whether that had gone out, but it'll be a different kind of event, but it's under the Give Light banner. Can you tell us more about that?
Well, in addition to getting an opportunity to learn about the provost and her vision in moving forward, We will be announcing, and I can't give you all of the specifics today because we want some of the mystery to be released on Monday of next week, but we will be announcing a program that is complementary to Illuminate and will catapult Illuminate forward in very transformative ways. It will be a gift that will be perceived across the higher education landscape in a very impressive way. It will reshape the way Baylor is viewed across the higher education landscape, and it will truly be transformative. So it's appropriate that we're going to be able to announce a program like this with a new provost coming on board, but it will not be anything that Baylor has experienced in its history. So really, really excited about it. And you'll get more details in the coming days.
Okay. Well, that's very exciting, Dave. You're not going to give us any inside information on
Stay
Monday.
Tuned.
Can you give us an update, though, on Give Light? Where are we overall right now?
Phenomenal year. We will have the largest year in the history of Baylor University in terms of fundraising. I told you a little bit about the fact that the Board of Regents endorsed leadership gift pursuits of those $300 million worth of projects. We have secured three leadership gifts of those four projects. So three of the four projects are going to move forward. We've received not one, not two, but three of the largest gifts in the history of the institution. We've had broad-based support from our constituents, and we will, in the coming days, be able to announce a gift that will be one of the largest ever, probably in the top 5%, not just here, but in the landscape of higher education. So there are some significant significant gifts on the horizon. But the biggest takeaway from all of this, for me, for my team, and for the Baylor family, is that collectively the Baylor family is coming alongside this institution, our trajectory, our mission, our priorities. And they're able to demonstrate their strong affinity to the institution by giving philanthropically. So it is a phenomenal year. It's a tribute to the Baylor family. Yes, there's been a lot of hard work done from my team, but it's the Baylor family that has come alongside this academic strategic plan and this comprehensive effort in significant ways.
It's exciting as we move forward with Give Light. It truly is, and with Illuminate as well. And Brett, we've talked about both of those. So we've covered fundraising and we've covered academics, but we've got another major initiative that is underway now, and that is Ignite, an enterprise resource planning system. Did I get that right?
That's good enough.
So I think what I'm trying to ask you to do is to, if you can briefly tell us what Ignite is and why it's important for Baylor, particularly at this juncture. You can do it much more eloquently than I can.
Oh, apparently. Probably not, but we'll give it a shot. So just to kind of gauge the awareness, because one of the things that we need to know is how good of a job we're doing in communicating about Ignite. How many people have heard the word Ignite? Okay, that's 100%.
Wow.
How many people know Ignite in the context of Baylor? Okay, that's good. I'm assuming and hoping that you know that it's essentially a complete replacement of the university's administrative systems, finance and HR. Illuminate and Give Light are a lot more exciting, Dave.
I don't know.
They're a lot more exciting. We don't get to travel around the country and tell people about Ignite. And
We do.
Yeah.
We tell them about Ignite.
But the thing that's important for us to realize, I look around, there are a lot of faculty in this room. There are a lot of staff. And systems like this are essential to have success with Illuminate, to have success with Give Light, to have success in growing research and becoming tier one. So our job and many staff in this room is to be behind the scenes, ensuring that the leaders of the university, the faculty, the deans, the PIs have the support that they need to do the job in the classroom, in the research lab, and elsewhere. Baylor has done an incredible job with the systems that it has. I'm amazed at what the staff and what the deans are able to do with the limited information available, with the antiquated system. So the real issue here is not just the technology, but how we can do a better job of doing our work to save time, to save money, to make you more effective, so that our students are getting the best value. You'll have to forgive me if I'm repeating myself. I know some of the staff members have heard this, but I want to give you a few examples. Baylor University has 11 different payroll cycles. That's one payroll less than every two business days. We're moving to two payroll cycles. When you think about 11 different payroll cycles and the amount of work that your teams are having to do, the number of errors that just naturally come out of that. So Ignite is helping us to make some transformation in areas like that. I know from talking to PIs and deans, department chairs, you have to wait to the end of the month to get a report to know what's happened with your expenditures, with your accounts. How many of you run out to the mailbox once a month to get your bank statement? No. Do you remember when you actually did that? Well, we still do that at Baylor, in a sense. Oh, but that bank statement doesn't have all your accounts. You have to wait quarterly to get your foundation accounts. So with this system and the change in our processes, it's just like your bank account. You can look on your phone. Things are going to be real time, up to date, accurate, so that you're spending your time really where the value is added and not dealing with difficult and duplicative resources resource management steps and administrative steps. So our goal is to make your life easier and better in the long run. The transition will be a little bit of a challenge, and we just ask for your commitment and patience as we get through that.
I think all of us look forward to that dashboard, that single dashboard. I think if I've taken anything away from some of those Change Champion Ignite meetings, it's the simplification of some of those systems, or all of those systems here at Baylor. And Brett, we appreciate the work on resources and support, so important across all facets of the university. And while you're still with us here, let's talk about you know, what Dr. Livingstone says a lot. She talks about the university's strength and resilience. We've heard her talk about that since the moment that she arrived on our campus. And one of the areas that we look at for strength and resilience is, of course, undergraduate admissions. And that's an important area because that's where, right now, the majority of our budget comes from. What can you tell us about the fall 2019 class, so our upcoming class, especially as we enter that key period? I mean, May 1st, not only the day that the provost gets here, but also the day that students have to make their deposit. So they'll make that final decision where they want to come to a university. So what is our 2019 class shaping up like?
Yeah, that is a tremendous question. And you pointed out why that is such an important question. And forgive me while I remind myself and my peers and everybody in this room, I know who pays my salary. It's the undergraduate students that attend this university. I know who is borrowing money, who is sacrificing, who's saving money, who's going without. Those students and those families are why we're here. So I think it's important for me as I'm trying to decide how can we be better, how can we be more efficient. That's important. It impacts these kids' lives for years to come. And so with that backdrop, I'm very happy to share that Baylor is resilient, and the results that we're seeing from parents and students is they trust you. They trust the faculty and the staff in this room with their futures. We have well over 34,000 applications again this year, approaching 35. May exceed that number before it's over with. The yield rate appears to be on target with at least last year. The discount rate is actually lower than it was the previous year. the academic profile of the students that are projected to enroll this year are as strong as they were in the previous year, if not slightly above. So all of those indicators, I think, are a tremendous endorsement for the work that you're doing, for President Livingstone and the Regents, and the commitment to Baylor being unambiguously Christian. I know when the president and I did a Q&A with parents at the beginning of this academic year, I don't guess faculty and staff go to that. It's primarily just students and their parents, and then we were up there on stage like this. But probably the number one theme was wanting to know that Baylor was going to remain a strong Christian university for their kids. They wanted them to be safe physically. They wanted them to have a good education, but they also wanted them to be in a Christian environment. So these results tell me that Baylor is viewed very strongly in the market. One other thing, if you'll allow me, we got results from a survey just about 2 weeks ago that was conducted with prospective students and parents. All of the scores in terms of parents trusting Baylor, parents' outlook towards Baylor, parents' assessment of the academic reputation of Baylor have significantly improved over the past 2 years. So that's another early indicator that Baylor is doing the right things, and that there's a lot of trust, again, in me and the folks in this room. I take that as a challenge that we've got to deliver on that. So good news.
It is good news. Thank you very much, Brett. And I want to build off, Dr. Carini,
sure.
Off of the conversation on undergraduates.
Sure.
Illuminate talks specifically about building Baylor's academic enterprise, a research portfolio, and increasing graduate programs. How will we maintain that legacy, that strong legacy, mm-hmm. and a transformational undergraduate mm-hmm. Education as the university grows and expands the additional research programs?
Right. I think the first place my mind goes to is what the president had said at her inaugural address. The world needs a Baylor, and we have been teaching with excellence and have had transformational teaching, to which pillar number two refers, for several decades. We'll continue with that, and that's where, as we go into the fall, certainly summer and into the fall, defining that better. I think this past year, we paid particular attention to pillar number three because teaching was so outstanding. Now let's bring in more ideas about what that transformational teaching looks like. So when students respond to surveys and we ask them, what do you like about Baylor? There's so many aspects of Baylor that they absolutely love. When you get into the teaching environment, it is our attention to students, our challenging students, are driving their curiosity and prompting them with questions that they didn't think they had. We're not going to lose that. How do we do more of that? How does that look differently in each of the schools? When I think of Gary Mortensen and the School of Music and interfacing with students with a wind instrument is very, very different from what's going on, say, John, with the School of Social Work, in business, arts, and sciences, which just has an array of departments. And so our challenge is, how do we think about transformational education differently, yet holding to the core that we have, so that we're recognized not just within Baylor, not just with our students, but nationally? I remember being frustrated and sharing this with the business school staff that there'd be a Wall Street Journal article talking about teaching innovation in business schools. And I was frustrated that we didn't get the call, and I've got the staff is right here. Wait, we've been doing that for 3 or 4 or 10 years, and these other schools are being cited for their innovation, which we've been through a couple of generations of what that is and improved upon it and have been rewarded and acknowledged by our accreditation source and certainly the university. I want to get those calls, and I want Baylor, and we all want Baylor to get those calls because we've invested so much in transformational education. Astounding statistic that I read, and we can read this time and time again, 90% of the jobs that our students will have, our current students right now, have not been created yet. And that's a challenge for us. So how do we teach today to prepare our students for what we don't even know that they will be in, what they don't know they will be doing years out. Where it goes back to, and this is our core, what do we teach? The perception of ethics among those that employ our students is second to none. And that is an existing strength that will continue to nurture. The notion of curiosity, perseverance, tenacity, all those intangible aspects are so important. How do we build that in, create that in every classroom, every situation? When I think of the classroom of the future and where technology will take us. It'll take us to certainly online education, but that's not sacrificing what we see around us at this university, what has happened in the classroom. So I'm excited about the future. I think the word transformational suggests changes. It could suggest we're going to lose something. We're not going to lose teaching for research, but we're going to do more in that transformational aspect because we created such a strong foundation.
Brett, you came to Baylor from a Research One institution, and actually you were there as the university, as Clemson made that transition to R1 status. So what will be the keys to Baylor having success in that arena, and what potential do you see here at Baylor?
If you will allow me to oversimplify, because I like to do that, and I think sometimes the answers are conceptually very simple. When I look at Tier 1 universities, and I've been to a lot of them, been a part of one, have worked with and collaboration a lot of Tier 1 universities, Tier 2, Tier 3, I feel like after 30 years in the industry, I understand the landscape. When I look at Baylor, at the quality of the faculty, the quality of the students, the quality of the infrastructure, the quality of the systems that we're about to be cutting edge on, the one thing that's most important is commitment. That may sound oversimplified, but you can go to Tier 1 universities that have worse facilities. You can go to Tier 1 universities who don't have the student profile that we do. You can go to Tier 1 universities that don't have the quality of the faculty, certainly not the quality of the academic enterprise across the entire spectrum. That's one of the weaknesses of the school that I came from, is strength in STEM and engineering, but not as strong in some of the other disciplines. So Baylor has the technical elements required to be Tier 1. What we have to have is commitment to that. When we are fully committed to that goal and committed to each other and believe that that goal is what is best for our students, we will do what it takes to achieve that. We will work out the facility issues. We'll work out the money issues. Those are the easy things. The people part, getting the commitment, having that singular vision and truly believing it is, I think, our greatest challenge. And when I think about Baylor's commitment to being unambiguously Christian, I say, okay, I hear through the grapevine that there are questions about, okay, we can either be Christian or we can be Tier 1. I'm sure others in the room have heard that. Some of you may have said it. I don't know. I'm glad I don't know who said what. But it's not an either or. When I look back and when I study my Bible, David, a man after God's own heart, was not a Tier 2 or Tier 3 leader. Certainly made a lot of mistakes. King Solomon doesn't appear to be a Tier 2 or Tier 3 businessman. Paul didn't hang out in Tier 2 and Tier 3 intellectual circles trying to influence the world. The only way that Baylor can maximize its impact, I believe, for the cause of Christ is to be a Tier 1 university. I don't see it as an either or. So, you know, my word is we can take care of the money. We can take care of the space. We can take care of all of those technical components. What I sense that we really need to do is to come together with that common commitment to that goal. And I'm convinced that it's not either Christian or Tier 1, but that in order to maximize our potential as an unambiguously Christian university, we need to be Tier 1. So
You know that Brett Dalton was a preacher in his other life?
No.
Well,
I came here because I believe this. So I'm pretty bought in.
And we are glad that you're here. Let's thank our panelists today. Dave Rozelli, Brett Dalton, and Gary Carini. We will go on to our Q&A portion of this afternoon. So if you have a question, we have Kent Ellis and David Lechner, I believe, who will have handheld microphones. So if you have a question, would you please raise your hand and we'll bring a microphone to you. And if you would be so kind as to identify yourself and your affiliation here at the university. So do we have any questions?
This is the Jerry Springer part.
Can we call on people?
Yeah. So, have
John. We're going to feel bad if you don't have questions.
I think you all have done such a fabulous job, especially Brett, in simplifying Ignite for us all. That was the most important thing. But so, Dave, are there any final words that you would like to share about Give Light? Do we have a question? Yes, sir. Dr. Ward, we've got a microphone coming to you right now. It's right behind you.
Okay.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
Yeah, Benny Ward from the physics department. In the Vision 2012, which is how I arrived here, we always had the question of the issue of to what extent the Board of Regents was supporting that particular vision. And here you have you did say that they approved this $300 million, but is it possible to describe in a general way the type of support that the regents are showing to this effort?
To the support to Illuminate?
Yes, I mean,
absolutely.
For example, I mean, is it roughly 50-50, with a little more than half, or is it more overwhelming? I mean, to what extent is it supported by the Board of Regents?
That's a great question. The vote for approval at the May meeting last year was unanimous. Our office interfaces with, in particular, with the Academic Affairs Committee, and as I'll do in May, and we've done each Regent meeting, is to give them an update on Illuminate and really to continue that dialogue. There continues to be absolute support. In the last three Regents meetings, we did a state of the school update, and they can ask questions. So we're looking at within the schools, where are they today and where will they move as we think about the pursuit of Illuminate, not just R1, but the pursuit of Illuminate. And so the schools with the deans there have updated. So I would say since last May, much deeper dive with support. They certainly speak to areas that we need to make sure we pay attention to. For example, and several things have stuck in my mind, when we talk about online graduate education, and certainly we look at that as a funding influence to pursuing R1, Tier 1, they are saying to us, which is a great word, make sure that we don't depersonalize those online students. How will they know it's Baylor? So that's a challenge for us in a good way. That's an example of how micro, how detailed in a good way, not managing us or telling us how to do that, but really raising the issue. Make sure it's very important to us as regents and as Baylor that those online students who are not on campus as much do believe that's a Baylor degree with all that means. Evidence for that, just anecdotally so that the audience knows, one of our first online programs was the MBA program. And we're astounded, and the staff will support this, on the number of online MBA grads that attend graduation on campus. And so they're coming in from not just Waco, not just Texas, but all over, because this place is so important. And so I go back to the Regents speaking to that, and then evidence that we're continuing to do that as that grows. So I would say unanimous support last May as that was presented to them, and continuing support, and again, more of an update and dialogue as we step into the Regents meeting next month in a couple of weeks.
Thank you very much, Dr. Ward.
If I can remember, in the time of our Vision 2012, and I'm not saying that this is going on now, but all of their supports, when they were announced publicly, were unanimous because they would take a vote, and it would not be unanimous, but it would pass. And then they would take another vote about whether they would say that the vote was unanimous or not. And that would also pass. And we found out that they were not really unanimous.
You know, what I would say, believe it or not, I'm the veteran of this group, and I'm beginning my fifth year. So I was hired in 2015, pre-President Livingstone. And I would say that the board, since the arrival of President Livingstone, has come alongside her leadership and supported unanimously her direction and the trajectory of the institution, which includes the Illuminate Academic Strategic Plan and the Give Light campaign, which was beyond just the $300 million of capital projects that they approved. They actually endorsed the $1.1 billion campaign. So my observation in my 4 years is that there was a big paradigm shift in terms of support and endorsement beyond the shenanigan that you just described, but a full support of the president because they believe in her leadership and they believe the direction she's taking the institution.
Also, Give Light is really coming and providing those supports and resources for Illuminate. So there's, you were saying, broad-based support of the Baylor family. So not only do you have that support from on high, from a leadership standpoint, but also from a resource standpoint.
Yes, and I would say, and I know many, if not the majority of you, have participated in this campaign in many different ways, and for that we are very appreciative. And we will need our entire Baylor family to come alongside this effort. But we are approaching $700 million towards the $1.1 billion goal. So to the question that Lori was about to ask, which is what can I say in summary to you, you should have tremendous confidence in the direction that the institution is taking and tremendous confidence that we can achieve this $1.1 billion goal. We will achieve the $1.1 billion goal. And also have confidence that this is a comprehensive campaign and the family, the Baylor family, is coming alongside not only the athletic initiatives, but coming alongside the academic initiatives to propel the academy. So from my perspective, the biggest change, the biggest shift in what we're doing today is that this is a wide, broad-based support of all of our initiatives from A to Z, and we're seeing a lot of success.
Question? Yeah. Yes, sir.
My question is, I've been teaching here for over 50 years. I see several people in the room here who I've had in class and whose children I've had in class. And the reason I came to Baylor was because I was interested in teaching. I could have gone to other universities that had much more of a research agenda. And when I went to Baylor as a student, my brother and I both went here. We both teach in the same department. Both of our wives went to Baylor. Tuition was $25 a semester hour. You could take 20 hours for $500. Today, what I see today is I teach 10 courses a year. The new faculty we're hiring in the School of Business teach 3 courses a year, none in the summer, and every 3 years get a sabbatical. And they're paying these new faculty right out of college more than my brother and I, who've been here about 50 years. What I'm saying is, how are we going to keep undergraduate education affordable? Most of the schools that we're competing with that are Tier 1 have 10 to 30 times our endowment. And most of these schools, I taught at LSU when I was working my PhD, schools like LSU and A&M in Texas, you never see a full professor in an undergraduate class. You never even see an assistant or an associate professor. All the undergraduate classes are taught by TAs. And I just wonder why Baylor wants to follow that paradigm, because when I came here, I thought Baylor was a Tier 1 university in teaching. We have led the Texas for years in a number of students that passed the CPA exam on their first try. Our law school has had a history of having the highest number of people pass the bar exam on their first try. Our finance majors have been rated in the top 20%. Harvard students come in the top 1%. When they graduate in terms of SAT scores, they're in the top 15%. Baylor students come in about the top 50%, at least in finance, when they graduate, they're in the top 20%. So I'm just wondering if we can achieve that level of teaching excellence going forward if our main emphasis, and all the new faculty know what the emphasis is. They know that their promotion, their tenure, their salary is not a function of their teaching. And that's one reason that five out of our six new hires in our department, only one of those people was born in the United States. More and more of these degrees, advanced degrees in any quantitative area, are going to foreign students. And so I'm just wondering what Baylor is going to be like in 10 or 20 years. Is it going to be a place that we can afford, that the average Baptist family could afford to send their children?
I'd be glad to take part of that. And there are so many facets to your question. It is incredibly complex, and we don't want to go down the road where you're left unattended. Can we go there? Any university can. We're looking from a more of a macro sense at enrollments nationally. So what's the demand for higher education? The criticism of the quality of education. Another dimension, as we come into Baylor, our undergraduate enrollment, we want that to be stable. We're going to see growth in graduate professional education, significant growth, which will help fund. So when we get to the funding piece within Baylor, given the fact that there may be less demand nationally, just as we see that 5 years to 10 years out. So as we look at funding, endowment increases, and each one of us is so impressed and deeply encouraged by the endowment picking up, which it's still relative to schools on the East Coast and West Coast, still less and growing significantly, so we can fund from that and not rely on tuition as much as we have. So the financial model needs to change, is changing. We're encouraged about that, so we don't rely on just on tuition as a source. Otherwise, if that's paying for operating expenses, that will explode just to cover costs. We can't do that, because then it comes to, what about it in the scenario that you described, somebody from Texas that wants to come here and it's simply not affordable and they're great students. We want to be able to serve that. We are in a tremendously healthy economy within the state of Texas. So we want to continue to serve that, in part funded by endowment, scholarships, graduate professional education, funding, research, transformational education, unambiguously Christian. Is it complex? You bet. And that's what draws us in. It draws us in because if left unattended, we could certainly go by the wayside. So there's a lot in your comment that wants to hold to our very mission and the ambitious pursuit of that mission, which means that the student that you cited, kind of as you articulated at the beginning of your comments, that those students are not left behind. This is a place where they can go, be proud of this, and then go do great things and serve the Lord.
Do we have any other questions? Thank you for your question.
Hi, my name's Becky Kennedy. I'm Assistant Dean for Spiritual Life. And Brett, before Dave said you were preaching, I actually just turned to Bo and said now he's gone to preaching. So, by the way, I'm going to tell Bert Burleson, our chaplain, to say he needs to preach in chapel fall 2020. So, anyway, I do have a question. I'm getting to it. You talked about we aspire to go to tier one, and you know, I was ready to shout amen. I wasn't sure if this congregation would allow that or not, so I held my amen. But I'd like to know, with 174-year history, how are we going to steer the ship? How are we going to change the organizational culture with and I'll just keep using the ship metaphor since I'm down that path, but a boatload. That was a Freudian slip. Wow. I'm glad I've already had my performance evaluation with Bob, by the way.
Yeah. It's on tape, Becky.
He just marked that down on my for next
we
year.
We use that term performance in South Carolina. Eval. I know what you mean.
Yeah. So I'll never speak in public again, but I'll finish my question, which is with a boatload of alumni and current students and faculty and staff, how are we going to steer the ship to change that culture, to go for, you know, that tier one and say, hey, especially if it includes moving the needle on human flourishing, as we think about the intersection of research and student and faculty engagement in communities, as we launch our students into the global society to say, how do we face these challenges? So any of you could answer that question, and I'd love to hear your answer on that.
You said my name as you started before you got to the boatload part. Let me just share some observations. I spent 10 years working in the provost office, so Gary and Gary have been patient with me as I sometimes get mixed up and forget whether I'm in finance or the provost office. But I want to share just a few observations that I have about Baylor, and they're informed from previous experience, but also working with folks. I'm looking at Larry Lyon here. In some ways, I want to say, Larry, stand up and answer that question. But I think there is a huge misconception at Baylor that makes us think we are so far away from Tier 1 that it's impossible or that it's beyond reach. I think if you have time to spend with Larry Lyon and some of his folks that have done research in this area, Baylor is Tier 1 in many areas. Baylor is already quantitatively and qualitatively Tier 1 in many areas. And I agree with, I don't know Professor Business School's name, but the teaching and the educational environment is nationally understood as Tier 1 here. There are certainly some changes and some areas that we need to improve in terms of funded research, doctoral productivity, engagement of postdocs, more terminal degrees, but it is not a draconian shift to all classes being taught by TAs that you can't understand, and tenured faculty members are off in a lab and you never get to meet them. That is not the only model. That was not the model that we followed at my previous institution. Full professors were in undergraduate classes, tenured professors. We didn't go the TA route because teaching and the core undergraduate experience was important. So there are pathways to R1 that allow Baylor to still maintain its integrity as an undergraduate teaching university that also engages in meaningful research and scholarship. But we do have to produce more terminal degrees. We do have to enhance our funded research. And all of those things are, I believe, well within our reach in a very reasonable period of time, 5 to 10 years max. They require change, they require some cultural change, but it doesn't have to be a totally different university. I think that fear may be holding us back from some of our commitment, and I really would love for Larry Lyon, but it'd take him an hour and a half to go through his revised presentation. But if you haven't seen that, get an appointment with Larry Lyon and understand how close we really are.
So
Gary, Dr. Morrison. Yeah,
so Brett, I'm so glad what he just said is just absolutely golden. And one of the reasons that Brett and I connected so well was that He came from Clemson. I came from K-State. K-State is the Kansas version of Clemson. K-State is a land-grant university. What I hear when you speak, sir, is I hear fear, and I hear emotion, and I hear all that you have that you felt goes to the heart of the sum total of your half century of experience here. I never would have stayed at Kansas State University for 26 years if what you described, the worst case scenario in my mind, was a K-State. This is a university that acts a lot like Baylor. It's a conservative place. Religion is huge at K-State. All right, we were consistently rated one of the most religious public universities in the United States. So it wasn't a stretch for me to come from K-State and come here. It is not an either or it truly is not. And at K-State, students from their first day of class, freshman year, had access to the best professors at Kansas State University. They really did. And we did not compromise on a whole variety of areas. And K-State ran in the top 1% of the nation in the number of Rhodes Scholarship, Fulbright Scholarship, Goldwater Scholarships, Marshall Scholarships at Kansas State University. So, and our professors were very, very adept at bringing their research into the classroom and connecting with their students that way. This notion that you can be a good researcher or you can be a good teacher is something that was foreign to me. I just didn't see that in my environment. I think we can do both of these things. I think that they can do them exceptionally well. And here I was sitting there and thought, I'm going to get out of here and I'm done with the provost thing. But I just wanted this. The stakes are enormous here. They really are. And so we want to make sure that you have the best information possible going forward.
Thank you, Dr. Morton. Yeah. We have time for one more question, if there is one. Yes. Ron, thank you.
Hello, my name is Ron English. I work in the Paul F. Foster Success Center, down in the basement in the Student Success Initiatives area. And very briefly, my job is to chase down all the students who aren't going to class and make sure that they know about the resources or dropping out, whichever one suits their fancy. I've heard you've all have talked a lot. Transformation is a big word for me, and unequivocally Christian. And to me, these are huge ideas. Like, they're not small. They can be simple principles. But to actually transform is a big concept. I was at a conference. It was called Connected 18, put on by EAB. We're using Student Success Collaborative as a tool in my area. And one of the presenters was from the Gallup poll. And he talked about how the number of students graduating from high school is declining. So we're going to have, most universities are going to have a challenge meeting the number of students that need to come in. Now, I know you all have talked about wanting to increase, you know, funds and endowments and things like that. But I think what I want to ask you about is, I know there's a lot of talk about research, and that's very helpful for to elevate the image of Baylor, making sure we stay Christian. But in my line of work, where I'm getting these students that are struggling, they're usually not struggling because they believe not going to class is a strategy for success, right? They don't normally believe that. Usually, if they're coming to me, there are other issues, whether there's something at home, whether they're not fitting in at school, anything along those lines. And so while we talk about all of these things that are very large, I want to just hear your response to this idea of how we're going to serve these different students that are coming in. They don't believe, even, like, I'm I'm old, so they don't like their ability to have grit and the perseverance is difficult. And so a lot of times trying to attract the students, I don't think that are 18 years old are being attracted by the fact that we're doing great research. So how are we going to serve these students? How are we going to make sure that Baylor is attractive to these students that are continuing to come out that we don't even know how they're going to work, as you mentioned? So how are we going to serve our student population and all of their various backgrounds and belief systems and expressions of themselves? How are we going to do that?
I think in part, and any one of us can answer, in part what draws the students back is part of our core, and that is when you look at that faculty-student interaction inside the classroom and the attentiveness to students, not moving into a let's just run people through here and check the box and take their check. That's not the kind of place that every one of us in this room is. We're not going to commit to that kind of place, but it's really draw students in. It's the caring that we do in the classroom. What you're stating is reality, and there are usually other issues associated with that. How can we attend to those? And that's even it today and this morning in President's Council really talking about that as well. So that's an ongoing conversation. There is in no way a desire to minimize and say whatever, that's not the kind of place. So I go to just it again, as I hear a major aspect of your question, students not going to class. So is class a place where they want to go because of that faculty-student interaction? So with that, professors teaching their discipline with enthusiasm. So it is what people discover, you know, and students have so much pressure today, and we continue to hear this. What's your passion? What are you going to do when you graduate? And that's unfortunate. And as we think about that, there's so much pressure to have an answer to that. Yet when you peel back the layers, nobody knows, but that's not the right answer. So how do we create a culture where I don't know what I want to do, but I'm exploring some possibilities? Our brains, neurologists tell us, our brains are still developing. You know, you get to my point, it's like I'm losing brain cells sitting here. But with that, they don't know, and you expose them to different things that can strike that match saying, that's it, never even knew about that. And we're in the classroom as faculty to do that, to help spark that and carry that perspective. Every interaction that they have with staff is so important. And we've had a chance since last year, and I've worked with Brett. When you look at Registrar's Office, Jonathan is here, Financial Aid, Cashier's Office, different interactions that students have, every one of those is critical. So each one of us has and will continue to have a significant role in the success of Baylor, knowing that every time we talk to that student, we're influencing them. And then as we look at what is our point, and it's to serve God and enjoy Him. And as we look at that is our motivation that is so different. I was an undergrad at UCLA, and within the first couple of days, they issued shirts with our student ID number on the back because we were a number, not a name. And that was to signal, and the students would joke about that. They don't care about our name, it's just our student ID number. And that said a lot, and certainly a lot of jokes came from that. This isn't that kind of place. We don't have that. We won't have that. We will not. And when you say the world needs a Baylor, as President Livingstone has said, within that, I think, is a clear message to us from a cultural perspective that Becky brought up that says we're the kind of place that listens to that student, that doesn't want that to happen. And we will pursue that student to the best of our ability to make sure they don't kind of get lost and fade away. We don't want that.
Well, thank you very much, gentlemen. We appreciate our panelists today. We thank all of you for coming today here to our conversation series. Hope you all have a blessed afternoon. And when you get on the interstate, watch out for the signs and drive very carefully home for the next 5 years.
Right, okay. Right.
Thank you so much.
Good. Thank you all. Thank you.